Thanks for tuning in to yet another interview from the Duluth Rundown podcast. Before we get started with the interview with Duluth ultramarathoner Ben Troke, I just want to do a quick shout out to this episode's sponsor, Austin Jaro. If you're looking for all your favorite brands for running shoes, running apparel, running food, running accessories, GPS watches, whatever the case may be, definitely head to Austin Jaro, Duluth's original running store. They're up in the mall area, 917 West Central Entrance here in Duluth. Thanks to Austin Jaro.
All right, and we are joined on our interview portion now of the Duluth Rundown podcast via Skype with Duluth's own Ben Troke. I'm sure a lot of folks know, at least know the name Ben Troke, because he's involved in a lot of races and a lot of different distances over the past, I don't know, I've maybe known you about 10 years, something like that, and definitely getting into the ultra scene in the last roughly five, I'm guessing. Ben can speak more to that later. But Ben, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. This is really cool.
Yeah. Well, let's get started. Typical question, you know, when did you get started running? How old were you? Where were you at? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so kind of a twofold answer to that. When I was a little kid, my parents were both runners. And so I lived in this little town called Malacca. There was a run from Malacca to kind of our nearest neighbor town called Princeton. That was about a 15-mile run. And there were, you know, so there were five people in my family total, and we would split that into three-mile segments each. And I can't remember exactly when the first race I did. I know my brother, my youngest brother, must have been in about first grade, I think, when we first did that run, and that put me in about fourth grade or so. And so that was probably my first experience with running. And to be honest with you, training for it, I wasn't a fan. You know, I was not a fan of training for it. But came race day, that was one of the coolest events of the year for me. It really was every year. So that was kind of how I got into it. Both my parents were, you know, pretty avid runners. My dad had run a couple of marathons, and my mom, until just a few years ago, really ran every single day. You know, she would get out, at least get a couple miles in every single day.
Wow.
The temperature was, no matter where she was, you know, she always found a way to get it in. And, you know, as a kid, I don't think I fully appreciated how dedicated she was, but I certainly do now, you know.
Yeah.
You know, by the time high school came around, I didn't run in high school at all, didn't run in college at all. And it was, you know, kind of that same mentality where, you know, running was a punishment in all the sports I wanted to play. I just wanted to get back to doing the sport that I came to play in. And I didn't really enjoy running at that point at all. But by the time I got out of residency, though, then I came up to Duluth in 2008. And my schedule at that point allowed for a lot more free time and flexibility finally. And my brother that year in 2008 finished his first Twin Cities Marathon. And I went down and I watched him. And I'd heard him talk a little bit about his preparation for it. But it wasn't actually all that, you know, it was cool, but it didn't really inspire me all that much to hear him tell about the story of training. But when I actually watched him finish, I was down about 26 miles or so just before the finish of the Twin Cities Marathon, you know, and there's a million people down there, and I watched him come by and just grind out this really tough race, and it just absolutely blew me over. And so when, you know, I thought about that for a really long time, and I thought about watching my dad finish Grandma's and the Twin Cities Marathon when I was a little kid too. And it was just like, you know, maybe this is something I need to try to do. You know, it's always kind of been in the back of my head that I should, you know, try a marathon someday. But that really seemed like the right time to do it. And so that's when I buckled down and, you know, I just pulled the trigger and registered for Grandma's the next year and went from really like nothing to crossing the finish line. It was kind of a rough race, but, you know, I did make it to the end of the line there.
So when was that, or how old were you when you kind of had this epiphany of sorts?
Yeah, so that was 2008. Yeah, so, you know, in October of 2008, I just hit a switch, you know. And it really did take me all the way until June to get ready for Grandma's. And even then, I just got smoked. You know, I did okay for the first half, and then I just completely fell apart. But there was also some value in just trying to grind that out, too, just to get to that finish. And, you know, I knew as soon as I finished that race that that was definitely not going to be a one and done for me, that I really wanted to go back and, you know, try to do better and just try to, you know, really work at dialing in, you know, a better race overall, you know.
I got to wonder what was going through your mind at 26.0. Like, did you think of your brother when you were looking back at him and like, you know, how do I look? Or,
oh, that's funny. Yeah, no. All I could think about was the finish line at that point. I was just so dead. Yeah, it was way hotter than I was ready for. And, you know, I've been walking a ton that second half. And when I saw that finish line, that's literally all I thought about. Ignored the crowds, ignored everybody else, you know, just needed to get across that finish line. But during training, even the beginning of the training was just, he was kind of miserable to me. I did not enjoy him. But I distinctly remember one particular day, though, and it was maybe early May, maybe late April. It was a really, really nice day out. And I had a four-mile loop from my house around out in the country. I lived in the Friedenberg area at that point. And I had worked the night before and came home, started running, and the sun was just kind of peeking up. And I had, for the first time, actually noticed the sun. I wasn't struggling anymore. I was actually breathing okay, and I was moving fine. And I wasn't having to take breaks and walk and all that. And I realized at that very distinct moment that, hey, this is why people actually do this. This is actually really fun. I mean, I'm outside, I'm watching the sun come up, I'm actually feeling good. And I was about 3 miles in by that point, you know, which for me at that point was, you know, a decent distance to be doing, but felt actually really comfortable and just all of a sudden just got it, you know. And that was really a pivotal thing for me. And everything since then has just been, you know, trying to, you know, find that moment again, you know, really nice.
Right. I'm curious, Ben, given, you know, your medical background and hearing you talk about, you know, you're basically getting fit, getting stronger and running, like you said, breathing easier and noticing other things and you're not thinking about. Did you think about what was going on physically? Did you think about, oh, okay, you know, my heart rate is here? And did that stuff ever play into your mind, just that the science-y side of it and notice your own development through that?
Absolutely, yeah. That was a really fun part of it for me as well, too, to, you know, to try to study my own body as it was going through this. Because, yeah, I mean, I really did. I mean, my wife will attest to this. The first run that I did after, you know, deciding this is it, this is, I'm going to start running, was a 1 mile run, and it went up a slight hill from my house. I don't know, maybe 50 feet total climbing, maybe. So I ran out half a mile, went up the hill, and I limped back to the house, and I laid on the floor for about a half an hour, you know, just like blue and purple. And I mean, so I really started from scratch. And, and watching that process and experiencing it firsthand, you know, watching some extra weight come off, watching, you know, the long runs, you know, they all seem to stay, you know, feel about the same at the end, even though the distances were getting longer and longer. Mm-hmm. It was a really neat process. Watching my base heart rate drop down, all of that stuff. Yeah, the respiratory rate and the respiratory drive being altered week to week. Really a cool process to follow through, you know. And you know, the same thing happened with races too. You know, watching videos of people finish marathons or longer, you know, 100-mile races and guys are sprinting at the finish. It physiologically makes no sense to me still, you know. Yeah, I've experienced that personally too. It's, you know, a really, really fascinating thing. It's definitely not studied well enough to know why you're able to do that. But people are. I mean, reproducibly, people can do that kind of thing. And that is, it's really a cool thing to think about.
The adrenaline.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be all upstairs, you know. And then it's just driving the right body chemistry to make everything feel good at the last moment, you know.
Wow.
If we just harness that and keep that going the whole race, that would be great.
So you finish your first marathon, grandma's marathon, first real race since, you know, childhood, right? And you knew it was going to be a one and done. And I mean, was it the race experience? Was it enjoying training? Was it kind of this feeling of I can do better? Or what was that kind of drive for the thought of, you know, this is not a one and done?
Yeah, so it was kind of all those, Mike. Yeah, I did become very enamored with the training by the end of it. You know, that watching that gain, like we were talking about, week to week was really a cool thing. That became addictive on its own. You know, knowing that there were plenty of things I could correct. I mean, I learned a ton about, you know, running in that, especially the really long stuff. You know, all of the long runs I had done were 20 miles or shorter, you know, so that last 6 miles was something I wanted to get to again to see if I could, you know, do better the next time around too. But yeah, the atmosphere of the race, actually being a part of it, and, you know, thinking back to watching my dad do it, watching my brother do it, but this time it's actually me in the event trying to, you know, grind it out. All of that just added up to say, yeah, this is for me. I mean, I'm 100% sure that this is what I want to keep doing. So.
Then, what came next?
Back then I was still under the impression that you really shouldn't run like more than maybe 2 marathons a year. And so, I left the rest of that year alone. Just, I did have some injuries that came about as a result of the race. So I had to work through those a little bit, but and I changed my form a little bit. I bought some Newtons, and that actually helped to correct some of the issues I was having. And by the next year, then I decided I was going to try the Twin Cities Marathon, you know, the two big ones in Minnesota. And so that's what I trained for that year, and that ended up I finished almost an hour shorter that next year. I actually did Grandma's and Twin Cities. So my times had dropped nearly about an hour. Everything was feeling a lot better. Nothing was, you know, quite perfect or anything, but, so it was still roads at that point. It was all roads, a few little shorter races here and there just to see, just for fun, you know, but it was always the longer ones that really called to me. Because I've never been really fast anyway, so there's no, I'm not up the front competing with these short races anyway. Not that I am with the long ones either, but it just seems more comfortable to me to just kind of settle in and just grind something out. So, but yeah, it was all just roads for a few years, and then I was trying to think back as to how this happened, but I know I was just doing some reading, you know, I don't know if it was, you know, whatever came up on the internet, and somehow discovered that people do these ultra marathons on trails, you know, 50Ks and even, you know, shortly thereafter, the 100-milers. And I thought that was absolutely, you know, a bit of a joke. I couldn't believe people did that. But I did remember then it dawned on me that my dad had talked about a guy from Malacca when I was a kid. His name is Bob Coolidge. Bob had done some 100-mile races in the woods, my dad had said. And I always thought that was I didn't think he was telling me the truth. But it dawned on me that he was. Bob was back, you know, back in the day doing these super long runs like that, and that they actually existed. And so, of course, that completely captured my imagination, but I really wasn't sure if I could do anything beyond a marathon. So I signed up for the spring 50K up in Lutzen. I've been super nervous going into that race. You know, is this going to be something I can do? I should be able to pull it off. But man, I don't know about those last 5 miles. This might be too much. So yeah, showing up for race day, yeah, I was super nervous about it. But the moment the gun went off, it was absolutely just a blast. Just had a complete blast. It was kind of one of those perfect spring days, you know, to be up there racing anyway.
Nice.
And yeah, crossing that finish line, I think that just set in stone that that's really what I wanted to do. You know, that was the deal.
That's so funny, Ben. It sounds so harmless. Like, yeah, I was just on the internet and came across, you know.
I didn't really know. I really didn't know. You know, I knew there were shorter trail races, and I had done a couple of those in town here. You know, back when that the Duluth Trail Running Festival thing was on.
Oh, yeah.
three races or 2 days, whatever. And I like that, but yeah, the idea of going super long like that was very foreign to me. Yeah, it really was.
So did you train on the trails, or what was your training leading up to that daunting 50 race?
Yeah, so that one I trained, I think, mostly at Hartley for that one. Yeah. Huh. Well, the course up there was a lot harder than the Hartley course is, and it was a big shock. My calves ended up cramping up really badly in the last couple of miles, and that was a totally new thing for me. I didn't know that was going to happen at all. I wasn't as ready as I obviously would like to be, but I was as ready as I needed to be to finish, though. So
kind of seeing a theme here, Ben. You know, you finish the marathon, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Finish the 50K trail, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and of course, then I started thinking about the 50 miler, because, you know, then I heard that existed right there, and this is, you know, similar course, right? And let's see, when was that? I did that. It's 2012, I think. I did the
picture, right?
Yeah, the 50 miler, and yeah, same thing. The night before, I remember. I mean, I could barely even eat. I was so nervous about the race. And of course, it's just like every other race now. I'll get nervous the night before, and then the day of the race comes, and and then, you know, by the morning of the race, and, you know, once I wake up, that it all that just washes away, and it's just left with the excitement there, you know. And I love the aspect of training, you know, these days. I love training for things, but I really love race day. You know, I don't think I'll ever stop racing, or, you know, being in races, just because, you know, that sense of you know, something big is going to happen today, something very difficult, you know, something really cool, and I'm going to share the experience with a lot of people. That kind of thing is really exciting to me, and I love doing that. But yeah, that sense of what can I, you know, what am I capable of? Can I do the next distance up kind of thing just kept evolving until I decided to just pull the trigger for that, you know, first superior, you know, 100 miler. And I'm trying to think. I think that was 2013 I did that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that went just absolutely fantastic in the beginning and absolutely terrible for the last 45 miles, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
And yeah, there were a lot of things that had come up that later in that race that had never come up for me before in terms of challenges. And so there were, when I finished that race, that was, you know, by far the coolest thing I had ever done for myself at that point, you know. Achievement standpoint, you know, grinding through that. I mean, I walked a ton of that last bit on bad blistered feet and lots of chafing that I just couldn't even imagine could exist prior to that race, you know, but I learned so much and I was able to tweak all of those things so that those things don't really end up being such a big problem for me anymore. But yeah, that first 100 miler was really a sentinel thing for me, you know.
Let me guess. I mean, Ben, when you finished the 100 miler, did you say to yourself, this is what I'm meant to do? Or what was?
Yeah, I actually did. I mean, I really loved the whole idea of being able to be out there for, you know, well, it was well over a day. But, you know, run through the day, run through the entirety of a night, watch the sun come up and still be doing that, you know, pushing forward, you know, for some just unbelievable distance. Yeah, I love it. That's definitely my favorite distance for sure.
Favorite distance, 100 miler.
Yep.
Now, at this point, how many have you finished? And I'm kind of curious, Ben, as well, you know, how many marathons have you done? I mean, even if it's kind of rough numbers, kind of the breadth of different race distances and types.
I think I've finished, I used to keep track, and I don't really anymore, I guess. I think I finished 700 milers, 7 or 8. Marathons, I think I'm up to like 10. You're not counting all the training runs, because I really, you know, kind of stopped counting road marathons once I, you know, did training runs that were longer than marathons. I wasn't sure if I could count those, or the 30 mile training runs or whatever longer. Mm-hmm. Are these actually ultra marathons? I mean, yeah, but should I count them? Probably not. I don't know. So something like in regards to I will say one thing in regards to Rhodes, though. The one thing that did call me back to the Rhodes was the chance to get to Boston, because that was one thing I did want to do. Mm-hmm. And I did get a Boston qualifier. And actually, I remember the day that I did, Tony, you were standing outside the store, and I was really hitting a bad wall. And you, I don't know, you said something really nice, like, you know, looking great or, you know, whatever. But the look on your face was genuine. And that literally actually changed my race. I'm not kidding. I think I've told you that before, but if I haven't, I'll tell you now for sure. But yeah, the last couple miles after that, I was able to really bear down, and I actually felt physically and mentally better after seeing you. So thank you for that, by the way.
Well, I do remember that, actually. So yeah, that was a fun time. And honestly, I like I say, I do remember it. I believed in you 100% for sure. Maybe you weren't believing in yourself at that time, but I believed in you.
Not at that moment. I was kind of wondering how this is going to pan out, but yeah, that was my PR for the time at that point. I did not actually get into the race, though. That was when they were, you know, taking the first, you know, the faster times in whatever division you were in, and I missed it by, what was it, like 25 seconds, I think. My brother then reminded me, if I just run, you know, 1 second faster per mile, I would have probably made it in.
Yeah.
It is stinky.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah. So then I went back to try the Twin Cities, I think the following year, maybe the year after. And I did get it at that point. So I was able to get, you know, that goal taken care of too. So I hadn't, and I still don't. I'd still like to go back to Boston, because that was a really fun experience, but... Mm. So I don't want to say I've completely shunned road racing, because there's a lot of value, and I still run on roads too, but my focus has shifted to being in the woods. I mean, the woods is where I really, really like to be. So
now, well, let's talk a little bit about speaking of the woods. To me, one of the most epic races is out there. And that you did, what, maybe 3-ish years ago, the UTMB.
Yeah. That
Talk about how you got qualified for that. Tell us about what it is. There's probably some people who don't know what that is or where it is and how you qualified, and then the whole journey and everything.
Yeah. Love to. UTMB is a 100, it varies a little bit, but about 105-mile race. And you start and finish in Chamonix, France. And you circumnavigate the massif of Mont Blanc, and so you're constantly just up and down around the entirety of this huge mountain. I mean, Mont Blanc's the tallest mountain in Europe, so it's always visible to you as you're running around there. And you end up going through Italy and Switzerland to get back to France and Chamonix and finish. You know, so it's really this just absolutely epic and amazing adventure through three different countries to get back to where you started. How did I get in? So you have they have a weird kind of qualifying system where you have certain races are worth certain points, and you have to have a certain number of points in order to be able to even register for the race. And so they have a pretty big list to choose from, definitely on my radar when I was looking at doing this. This didn't just happen by chance. You know, I picked races that would qualify me for entry. You know, generally you have to do at least 200 milers within a 2-year span, and then something else on top of that. It's kind of a ballpark as to how to get in. And so that was, you know, as I realized this is what I want to do, I'm going to have to start planning ahead if I even want to think about getting into this race. And so I picked races that I could that could get me in, and they have a lottery every year, just like, you know, Western States and Hard Rock and a lot of others now. But it's pretty competitive, but not nearly like, you know, the big ones here. And so on my first draw, I actually got picked for that one, which I think I had about a 33% chance, something like that. So not a terrible chance. But got in and immediately started worrying about how am I to train for this, because there was, I think 30-something thousand feet of gain in that. It's a ridiculous amount for a guy who lives in Minnesota, you know. But
yeah,
but yeah, the excitement
of mountain running, right? I mean,
it just
steeps.
Yeah, it was. You were either going up pretty steep, down pretty steep, or there were a lot of actually flat spots in between where people could make a lot of good time. But yeah, it seemed like you were either always climbing or descending. It was just a leg just grinder. But yeah, so my whole family went over for that, and we spent some time just kind of touring Europe since we're gonna go over there. We might as well spend a little bit of extra time. And I have colleagues that I'm fortunate enough to work with that were really happy for me to get into this, and they were willing to shift around their schedule. So I had a really nice big block of time that they were able to help make for me to go do that. So we were in Europe for a couple of weeks, arrived in Chamonix, and it was just one of these just absolutely amazing experiences to, first of all, to see Mont Blanc, because it's just an absolutely gorgeous mountain. But then to come into this little tiny, mountain town in the middle of France with, signage everywhere for UTMB. I mean, it was definitely a big deal in that town. And just the atmosphere, because there's actually, there's like three or four other races, that go on around that time as well, too. The atmosphere of running just completely takes over in the town. And, so we were able to watch some of the other racers come in. I'd watched plenty of videos by now, to watch other TMBs. And so to be in that same, space, to see the church that's in all the finished photos, to see what the windy little streets in the town are like, to see that in person was just unreal. It was so much fun to be there a couple of days ahead of the race, just to be a part of all of that, too. But the start of the race is pure chaos, though, because they start off with, I think they let 2,500 people into the race. Not all of them show up, of course, but a lot of them do. And, so it's just a complete madhouse at the beginning. People are kind of lining up down side streets just to get to the actual start, when we're about to go. And as soon as they do fire off the cannon, it's just the front runners just sprint out of town, basically. But the rest of us are left kind of just shuffling because I was probably a third of the way back, I suppose. And yeah, it was a really slow grind getting out of the town just because there was a very small little chute for us to run through. And it was just surrounded by a bunch of people just going crazy, just absolutely losing their minds over the race starting. But yeah, but you just couldn't get moving until you got in the other end of town. You run to another town, fairly close by, pretty easy little section right there. But then as soon as you get out of that little town next to Chamonix, then you start this just really long climb. And that was kind of again how the race went. Just long climb after long descent into. Generally, you climb up to some awesome view. And then descend into some little town is kind of how it went. And every little town, no matter what time of day it was, what time of night it was, there were always people out there, just having a party and cheering you on. It was really phenomenal, really cool. Even these really tiny, tiny little towns, somebody was out there cheering for you, just having a good old time. It was much more of a like an immersive experience from a bystander kind of perspective than we see, I think, in the States. Obviously there are people along the race course that are cheering for you, even in marathons and all that. But in this, it felt like the whole community, whatever town you were in, would come out to support all of the runners. Like it was a really big deal over there. And so that was always fun too. One, to see what these little towns look like, but also, to be be a part of all of this big, huge experience that was taking place.
Now, is the race course a kind of pre-existing trail, or is it more of a network of take up the circumnavigating?
Yeah, it is a pre-existing trail. Yeah, you'd be able to follow it any day of the year. Yeah. So that was.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, really fun experience. My wife chased me around all the entire mountain. So she was, driving with, four kids in the back of a car. In the middle of the night, she would go wait for me at some of these little towns, and then I'd call her when I'd arrive to the aid station, and she'd just pop right over and You know, she'd massage my feet or bring me this or that, and you know, get me back on the contract, because that was a really, really difficult race. It took me over 39 hours to do, and that's without sleep. You know, that was just slow moving and lots of time in the stations trying to gather myself back up. Lots of hallucinations at the end, but yeah, she helped me make it all the way through. There's no question that was a big part of it for me. But the other big part too was also the views were unlike anything I've ever seen or even imagined. You know, I'd seen lots of pictures, lots of videos of UTMB, but that course completely blew me away in person, more so than I expected by a long shot. You know, They do start the race at, I think it was 6 p.m. You know, so they started in the evening. So that first couple hours, you get to see some of the sights. But then you're dark again. You know, your little spotlight is all you see.
Right.
Got an entire day the next day, which was just amazing. It was really hard to be too down on yourself, you know, even if you're feeling pretty punky. And all you had to do was just look across the valley, you know, and just, you can see for miles and miles, know where you are. And
sure.
It was really easy to pick yourself up at that point, you know. So yeah. I would like to go back and see the two nights that I missed all of the views. I'd like to see those, you know, at some point. Yeah, that's the only downer about the race is that you just have to, you know, go, well, I have to go through two different nights to get to the finish.
Yeah.
A lot of unseen new territory that I would like to go back and see, though.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. Wow.
So you've done, this is 105 miles. You've done a couple 100-plus mile races as well, Ben, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah, the Superior, I've done a couple of, about three times, I think. Western States, just about 100. And then the Bighorn is another one. And then Arrowhead being 135.
Yeah, and I was thinking about you actually might have been even earlier today or yesterday, but because Arrowhead was just kind of, this is Arrowhead season, and we're really in Arrowhead weather right now with this cold snap that we've had, and you just completed it last year. We were talking off air here, January of 2020. Were you thinking about Arrowhead a little bit here in the last couple of weeks?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I was in for this year too. And I was basically, I figured they probably wouldn't go through with it, and, you know, and they shouldn't have. I believe they made the right call on that, but I was training as if it was going to happen regardless. I mean, I like ramping up, anyway, and I was kind of coming from a point where I hadn't been feeling too fit, so I thought, well, that'll be a good excuse for me to just, you know, buckle down and, you know, get back training again. And so yeah, I was trying to just assume that everything was going to go forth, and, you know, doing a lot of shorter snowmobile trail kind of work, you know, pulling the sled all the time, trying to dial that in. And that's, to me, that's one of the more interesting and more fun aspects of the winter racing is the, you know, getting my gear together and trying to get everything that I have to be as minimal as possible, but also make sure that I stay safe too. And I still feel really, really new to that. Even though I've done this for a couple of years now, but it just seems like there's so much more for me to learn, and I like that part of it as well too. You know, I like not knowing everything and trying to sort out ways to get around problems that are coming up, or you know, have logistical answers for kind of most problems that I'm going to be able to deal with ahead of time solved. So I really enjoy that part of it too.
The next,
I agree.
Yeah.
Especially in the winter stuff, in those winter ultras of like Arrowhead specifically, with there's so many things that could happen, and to try to plan for them and be prepared for them as best as you can. And then go through it and then figure out what you didn't quite get right so you can do it better the next time. That's a really fascinating journey just in and of itself.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, that's one of the things I learned the first time I did it, a winter ultra, was the Tascovia 80 a few years back. And it was a really cold year. I think when I didn't make it to the finish, I bailed at about, 63 miles, something like that. And it was 20 below in my car when I, you know, drove off. And I remembered well after the fact that I had hand warmers in my bag. You know, I had extra clothes in my, you know, in my sled that I could have used. But there was something about being that cold for that long, and now my hands, I could, you know, barely feel them, barely move them. You know, I'm not going to be that guy that gets the frostbite, right? I just can't. I can't be a doctor who ends up having a medical problem happen because I'm dumb, right? So I bailed on the race, but it dawned on me, like I said, later on that I had more gear. I could have dealt with it, but my mind was just in a different place at that point. And that had never really happened. I mean, all the summer races, I know all of the gear I have, even at the end of the race, you know, even at the end of UTMB, I could have told you exactly what gear I had in my pack and what I needed, what I could use. But this was, I don't know, 19 hours in, something like that. And I'm already forgetting that I have life-saving, you know, race-saving kind of gear just sitting 3 feet behind me in my sled. And that was kind of a shocking experience too, right? Like, how did I get to a point where I couldn't figure out what I could have done to make everything better for myself? And so that was I went back and did Tuscobia the next year. With a decided focus on, you know, preparing myself well ahead of time to remember that happened and to not let that happen again. And it hasn't yet, but that was a really interesting experience too, right? To know that, wow, I guess, a decade into doing this, you know, longer running stuff, I can still, not have a clue I'm doing. You know, and that was, and I like that part of it. I like figuring things out. It's more of an adventure than, right, if you don't have everything dialed in, then things can go wrong that you don't expect. And that's what I like about the 100-mile distance too, is that there's so many things that'll come up that you can't predict, that it does become more of an adventure than just a, you know, just a jog. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I gotta ask. I mean, is the next frontier, I mean, have you done a 200 mile distance, and is that on your radar at all?
So I have not done a 200 mile distance, and I've thought about it a bunch of times. I'm sure someday I'll pull the trigger and do it. Yeah, it's one of those things where once it gets in my head, it's just gonna happen. It's just more of a timing sort of thing. The other thing too that has kind of come up for me lately is more maybe multi-day kind of things, not so much like stage races. I don't know that really appeals to me, but just more just kind of out on my own sort of things that would involve, you know, bigger distances, probably mountains. I love being in the mountains, you know, so, you know, something like that where I'm able to move, you know, quicker than just a hike would be, you know, but something that involves, you know, a fair amount of actual adventure is becoming more appealing to me too, you know.
Are you thinking kind of like a fastest known time attempt style type thing? Or I know you're it's clear that, you know, the race kind of atmosphere is a draw for you as well, you know.
Yep. Yeah, so that it would be something like that. I'll always keep doing the races, but I think that part of me does want to just experience some of these things, you know, just on my own as well too. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just to prove to myself that I could do it or what. But yeah, something. And I don't even. That's the thing. I mean, I don't even have that really fully conceptualized yet as to what I want to do. But for instance, a few years ago, I went up and hiked up to Long's Peak. And by that, I mean, I hiked pretty fast, ran when I could, and basically ran all the way back down. And so I was able to do it in a, you know, pretty short period of time compared to a lot of the hikers that I saw out there, you know, that were there starting at, you know, 3-4 in the morning or whatever. And I went up at noon, I think I left, and easily made it back down before sundown. And it kind of dawned on me how, you know, how much ground people you know, if they're running, can actually cover and do and still have other time, you know, in their day to do other things, as opposed to just the slow slog that, you know, literally lasts all day for the same distance. Being decently fit and, you know, used to running longer distances, it just opens so many doors that there's so many different things that I could try or do that I've never even thought about. And so I'm trying to explore that a little bit as well, too, especially now with the, you know, pandemic kind of closing everything out. Is there anything that I could do, you know, some big, you know, mountain loop that's, you know, not a race or anything, but that's been charted and, you know, it's something that I could find my way through without getting, you know, catastrophically lost somewhere. But that would be still, a grand adventure to take on. That's kind of appealing to me, particularly right now, I think.
Absolutely.
Very cool. So those are kind of the next steps for you. But I know you've got a 100-miler on the books. Let's talk a little bit about that coming up. Is that that's this year?
Yeah, that's this year. Yep. So that one's the Run Rabbit Run, 100-miler in Steamboat Springs. And this is one I did a few years ago. And just love the course. It's just absolutely beautiful out there. It's a bit of a difficult start. You basically run, I don't know what, like 100 yards down a little short path to get to basically a straight climb up, what was it, like 4,000 feet up, up one of the ski slopes right there in town. And it's pretty unrelenting, and it gets pretty dang steep at times too. So that's the way you start the race. The first, I don't know, 3-4 miles or whatever, is just nothing but up, 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 up. But it puts you in a really cool spot. And after that, you're just kind of loping along fairly flat up in, you know, the upper timbers. You kind of pop out to some amazing views, but you really have that neat alpine feel up there too. And I just love that. It was just so much fun. But I ended up getting really, really nauseous. And I never had. My stomach had never been an issue for me at all. And I was puking along the way, and I knew that the last bit, it was going to be really hot. It was one of those, I think they set a record in Denver, you know, around the time of that race, you know, for temperatures. And I knew if I couldn't get anything in, there was a really long distance between a couple of aid stations, it was just going to dry me out, and I didn't want to take any risks, not knowing that, you know, everything actually was just fine within my body, but having never experienced, you know, vomiting like that before, I kind of worried that something actually was wrong at that point. Didn't turn out to be the case at all, but, you know, so just another lesson learned that, you know, I hear tons of stories about people puking in the long races, right? Apparently it happens to me too, so. But yeah, so that one I bailed from, and, you know, that's just been eating away at me ever since then. So that's just, for better or worse, that's something I just can't drop. If there's a race I haven't finished, I have to go back and, you know, just knock it off. You know, I have to. What? I guess my dad always, you know, wanted me to, you know, for shooting baskets or whatever, to end on a good note, right? So make that last basket before you walk away. And I think that kind of sticks with me today with that, with races as well too. I gotta at least finish, you know, what I started.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah, for sure. Finish with like 10 straight free throw makes or something like that for your practice or whatever.
Yeah.
What time of the year is Run Rabbit Run?
It's the middle of September.
Okay. So yep. You have good amount of time this year to train for it. Sweet.
How was last year with the pandemic, Ben? I mean, did you have races cancel? How did you make up for them? Did you do any epic adventures or what was your running like just in general?
I did. So I was actually registered for Run Rabbit Run last year too. That was the nice thing about what they did was they just let you roll it right over, you know, to this year. So that was a bit of a downer, but my running actually struggled a bit. There was a lot of stuff going on. We ended up moving last year. Work was extremely busy for a long period of time too. So, life kind of took away from my running anyway. So I don't know that I could have been fully prepared for Run Rabbit Run, anyway, you know, the way I'd want to be prepared for it anyway. And I ended up just kind of getting in when I could get in, when I could get it in, you know. And I wasn't very fit even going into the Wild Duluth 50K. I did do that one. And I had a blast. My brother came up and ran with me for that. And, you know, and just like every other race, you know, my immediate family, my wife and kids, they always come out and cheer. And I saw them a couple times on the course. And, you know, that's the other aspect of racing, too, is that, you know, that that time you're there with your within your own thoughts, and then, you know, being able to every once in a while pop out and see some, you know, some of your favorite faces, get remotivated and get back out there. That's another part of racing that I absolutely love. So that's, you know, why I wanted to do the Wild Duluth, even though I wasn't really all that ready for it. I think I just needed to do something like that, and was glad I did. So yeah, but my brother ran that whole thing with me too, which was another cool experience, because I don't get to see him very often either. But that was it. That was it for the entirety of the year, leading up till now. And again, I was getting ready for Arrowhead now, but that didn't work out. And so I've tried some just other local, you know, snowmobile trails, just kind of looping things, creating my own kind of courses. My wife crews me for those, and so it's not exactly like a race, but it's more of a just, well, let's just go have some fun kind of thing. And I've enjoyed doing that too. So
good. Very cool. Any other events that you're kind of shaping up for 2021 then?
Not for 2021. I think, you know, ultimately I want to do Hard Rock at some point. I've yet to get into that. I think I have like five entries in there. I still haven't been even on a wait list for Hard Rock, but that's definitely a goal race for me to get into at some point. We did volunteer out there on our way back from Western States. We happened to just time it out just right, so we went to the Grouse Gulch aid station to help out there that day, and that was absolutely gorgeous, you know. So I love the lore of the race, and, you know, I follow it every year, but to see, you know, it actually go on in person was that was definitely a deciding factor that, yep, someday, somehow, I'm just going to have to get into that race, even if it takes me 10 years, you know, whatever, I'll keep plugging away until I get in. That was really cool. So that's probably the only big bucket race. I mean, there's always in the back of my head the idea of doing, you know, the Iditarod, you know, the 350, whatever, but that's probably a ways off, I think, for me at this point.
Ben, I have one last question for myself, and I actually want to bring it back here, back home a little bit. Did you mention that you moved here in 08, is that right?
Yep, 2008, yep.
2008. And so, like myself, I moved here in 06, so I'm pretty, like you, I'm still kind of new to the Duluth area. I want to know for you, what's it like living and running in Duluth? What can you say about that?
Oh, I love being in Duluth. You know, so I've lived out in the Friedenberg area. I've lived up by UMD, and I've lived out here in Hermantown now. Especially being in town or here in Hermantown, I mean, it's a super easy access to a trail system that can connect you, and you can just go and go and go and go, you know, as long as you want. And there's so many amazing trails that interconnect too that, you know, I'm finding out here that I'd never run on before. That I think we're just truly blessed to be in this area. I talked to my brother who lives down in Minneapolis, or the Minneapolis area anyway, and you know, they have some good trails down there as well too, but it's just nothing like what we can have up here. You know, the elevation change, the constant up and down, being in town and yet feeling like you're way out in the woods, that's just really special. I mean, I wish I could even tell you, but countless runs at Chester Park right after work. You know, I'm a half a mile from Chester Park, and that links me into one of my favorite little sections to kind of unwind after the day, you know, running up and down along the little creek, you know, hearing the water flowing, not feeling like I'm anywhere near, you know, anybody else. You know, you can see a few houses, I know, but if you choose to not look over there, all you see is woods and the creek, and it's that's really amazing to have that kind of access just right there in town. So, yeah, I think this is a really special place for a lot of different reasons. But and I'm sure the people who do a lot of biking love, you know, all the trails that we have here as well, too. But, well, I think we got it completely made as runners here.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think Duluth has everything except elevation. We have everything everybody else has except for the pure altitude, you know. But we do have incline, we've got flat, we've got trails, we've got roads, we've got everything. So we've got scenery.
Yeah, and the fact that they took, you know, a lot of the trails took that into account as well too, and you'll pop out every once in a while to just some grand vista. Yeah, I really dig that. I love it.
Yeah. Cool. Mike, you have any other questions for Ben before we sign off?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I have a few questions that could spur off into 20-minute conversation, so I guess maybe not nothing else for right now. But, yeah, I feel like we could just yap on forever, you know?
Oh, I love talking about running. I love talking about running.
Well, Ben, we're super happy to have you on the podcast. I've been wanting to have you on for a while, so I'm glad contacted you last second, so thank you for agreeing. I think you just got off a shift, didn't you? Did you just get off work a little bit?
No, I worked overnight, so I got to go in a few minutes. But
oh, you got to go in? Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. This is definitely a privilege. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, well, best of luck for the rest of your training. Maybe we'll see you out there on the trails, and we'll be watching for you at Run Rabbit Run.
Sounds good. Hey, thanks, guys.
Okay, and that wraps up episode number 33 of TDR. Big thanks to Austin Jarl for sponsoring the podcast. Big thanks to Ben Troke for being our interview guest. Really awesome to talk to Ben. Mike and I were talking after we spoke with Ben that we had more questions that we wanted to ask too. So maybe we'll get Ben back on the podcast. I've thought about this, Mike, is it'd be cool to have almost everybody back on the podcast again to ask them more questions, because I know that there's more that we could talk about with all of them. So I think you may end up hearing some, to our listeners out there, you may hear some repeat guests again as we kind of fall back on and double back on some of our guests and see how races went. They were talking about other questions that we had for them. I think that'd be kind of interesting. Anyway, thanks to Ben for joining us. And Mike, hope things continue to go well for you in the next few weeks. And yeah, we'll talk to everybody again soon.
Sounds good. See you next time.